T. Fanning, Reel 3.
When I went down for my formal, I was arrested at 20 minutes to 4 in Albert Square by an elderly copper. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't have done. I was trying to organise the boys in my way, you know, because it all cut loose after the battle at London Road, because I had agreed not to go on the demo. I wasn't on the demo, I'd agreed not to go, several of us, so that we could take over if there was any trouble and that committee was arrested. Right. Chris Flanagan was the organiser. So, I went down to Old Trafford, selling me tablets, if any of that, giving me tunable water. And I boarded a bus 20 minutes past 3. And got up at 20 to 4 in Deansgate. That was the evidence for me. Took them 3 appearances to get me down. Then a lad had been assaulted in the station. You know, when I was in the station under the town hall, when I was sent in there, he was crying. I says to the lad, "What's the matter with him?" He says, "Sergeant Woods, give him a passing." So we made the appearance, and I'm asking for an adjournment. So Chris Flanagan come from the back of the dock. There was 11 of us. Chris Flanagan come from the back of the dock. "If you'll grant the adjournment, Your Worship, I'll see that these men, the moment I represent, will get them legal aid." So it was granted. But Sergeant would run out to the warrant office, got a warrant and knocked Flanagan off. And put him on the same charge, assaulting the police, inciting to riot, and attempting to rescue a prisoner. So we get in. For Chris Flanagan, the evidence was given by Councillor Ernie Hope that he was in the Lord Mayor's parlour from 10 minutes past 3 to 10 minutes to 4. A Stonewall alibi. 3 months. There were 2 lads from Salford, on the same charge. They brought the Labour Exchange clerk and the register to show that on that day, that at 3 o'clock, they had signed on the register. That had signed on. Now, in those days, you couldn't travel back from Salford to Manchester, as you can now, by a bus route. You had to catch a tram. And they couldn't have been there for 25 past 3. Couldn't have made it, unless they took a taxi cab. Sent one down for 12 months. They sent one down for 2 months, and 12 months bound over for the other one. Well, ran all through the 11, or through the 12 now. The evidence for me was, that I was arrested at 20 minutes to 4. The bus guard came along, I subpoenaed him to make it all right for him. You know, when I went to see him, he said, yes, I said, "Well, let me subpoenaed you, because you have to give no option of coming then. You've got to come. They'll keep you in the clear with your bosses." So I subpoenaed him and he gave evidence that was on his bus board at 20 past 3 and at 20 to 4. That put me in the clear. I needed all kind of things. I goes in the witness box for this bloke that's been assaulted. And we've got half a dozen prisoners out on an Home Office order to give evidence for the assault on this lad. They were all there, but they only brought one up. And I went in the witness box as evidence for him, for the assault. So, of course, I had to deal with my own case first, and took my story. Oh, and when I went in, I affirmed I would take the oath in the ordinary way. So the clerk said, "You don't believe in God?" I said, "No, sir." You ought to be ashamed of yourself. I've been in here, got to say to him, I wish Jesus Christ was trying me instead of you. But I didn't. I didn't want to make it worse. I'm more concerned about defending this father. Yeah. So it comes to this. Well, I said, well, gentlemen, I didn't see the actual assault. I didn't see the actual assault. But this, I called the gentleman, pointing to the sergeant, would. This gentleman here, and it was him that gave evidence against me. And he'd put a stick in my hand. Supposed to be clouting everybody out, and then included on the assault. So I thought, well, you put a stick in my hand, I'll put something in your hand. It wasn't true. I said, this gentleman here, I said, I heard him say to the accused, McNair, if you don't stop blubbing, if you don't stop crying, I'll give you some bloody more. I didn't. I didn't hear him. But I thought, he's put something in my hand, I didn't know. I'll put something in his mouth, he didn't know. God, I knew it was going down in any case. Then they brought up a civilian who recognised me at such a corner, shouting the odds and not what.
Which is what he did.
So, bottom, I put the oldest clothes I had on. You know what they do in jail, they steam them up and everything. And an old overcoat. So, I passed the slip to me solicitor. I was wearing a distinctive black overcoat when arrested. So he asked this civilian, he said, what was your dress like? Well, you could see that was fluttered, and the court could see it. Anyway, come on, 70 years now, he said, yeah, you were wearing, he was arrested in a distinctive black overcoat. He'd been put there by the police. You get all this kind of thing. Did you expect it?
Yes. It's a basic part of the training, the art of perjury.
You expect all this.
Yeah,
they're always fair bits.
Any questions about Spain?
And then when it was inside...
Well, tell me, you see, we weren't there at the same period. Tell me it was one of the earliest. They wouldn't allow me to go until later on. I can't think of any other. No, I don't think there was another question.
I was just wondering about how the, you know, in the very early period, because if I'm right, you were there very early on.
I was involved very early on with the recruiting. In fact, they wouldn't let me go, but I was the lad who sorted the Aberdeen lads. Do you remember that?
How well was the brigade organised in Spain? I mean, was it how well was it organised in Spain in the fairly early period when you were there on your, you know, your
well, listen, there's a lot of things you wouldn't say publicly. But and I only go as far as the 16th, what happened later, and I never talk about what I don't know. I was only down for 5 days. We've got to judge it this way. Our officers were amateurs. And it's everybody to their own job. Our officers were amateurs, but they were brave men. Never forget that. But they were brave men. I mean, it's like I, such as me, are the ex-soldiers. You could see many blunders that were being made. And there was blunders being made. I'll tell you from one, for example. In Cornicle Hill, there was Conway, Kit Conway.
Yes,
good. And the Watsit rider, the Speedway rider, I forget his name.
Ken
Beckett. And he'd never been a soldier. Kit Conway had experiences, yes, he had Irish experiences, hadn't he? But he's coming along. Stand up, let the fastest bastards have it. Stand up, and well, it was all wrong. On top of Hill Wheel, no earth was up. It was a land prone position, John. Wasn't it? The Chihuahuan wouldn't say anything publicly.
Yeah.
But his blunders like that made.
Yes.
But that'll and then again, the troops here hadn't been time to train them proper.
Yeah.
They hadn't time. In fact, we should have been on the Karama a week and a fortnight before they crossed the river.
Yes.
Well, we wasn't there. They crossed the river. But it wasn't time to train the lads proper. You're training the British Army that you can take shelter behind a grass.
Yes, that's true.
Aren't you?
Because
I mean, whatever the British Army is, I'm speaking in infantry terms,
they
train you well, or you're well trained in the British Army.
Yeah.
Everything had to be improvised, desperatory.
Yeah.
Desperatory. Because, you know, Spain's position was so desperate, that it was a matter of desperate urgency to get men to the front, possible moment at the expense of...
Well, I'll give an example in its simple sense. One day, got the sock up and soaping it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm soaping it. See? The lad said it was a little thunderstorm with a bit of nutters. That wasn't. It was one of the six in the British Army in a route march.
Mm. Yes.
Soap inside your sock.
Yeah. And what, it stops your feet going all...
It stops your feet from scraping against the shoe and not what?
Yeah.
Helps.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little things.
How long training did the lads get? Those that hadn't had military experience had some bit of training when they got to Spain, didn't they? Did they, is that right?
They had what?
You were saying that it was optional for those who had military training that they could go straight to the front.
Yes.
Or they could stay back and be trained. But those who hadn't had military training would have to stay back for a little while to be trained.
Yeah.
How long would that training be?
Well, they only got about 6 weeks.
About 6 weeks?
If that.
That's right. Well, even when I went out, which was much later, they wouldn't let me go at first. 6 weeks was what we...
Because even us,
we
lost three parts of the battalion for the day that I got down.
Yeah.
We'd lost half of it before I went.
Yeah.
Yes. At a later stage about this business, by the way, of training and learning the art of war, at a later stage, a very good development took place.
Mm.
And this was, instead of officers, and what we would call in the British Army NCOs, seeing it all, you know, in training, encouraging the initiative of those who weren't NCOs or officers, that there was a mass activist movement started throughout the Republican movement, and I should say it was at its very best in the International Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
We had a mass of them in the British Battalion, where an activist took a pledge that he'd do his damnedest to be first to master his jobs and his techniques, and secondly, the first to pass on his own technique and knowledge to his comrades. And it really, once the lads got the idea, at least a great mass of them wanted to be activists.
Mm.
They actually had a certificate, you know, where you would... another, it worked in this way as well, that some were good at one thing, but not so good at the other.
Mm.
And there became an intercommunication where you would get a toe. It was an example, in a way, of socialist... competition, which in the Soviet Union later became called socialist emulation, where it was no good a worker, a shop worker, being out in front and earning a higher wage because he was advanced.
He would be
living even better if all his workmates had the same technique, and this was the spirit of the thing behind the Octopus movement. And if you make your right hand man a better soldier than he is today, you'd be safer beside him.
Well,
it's socialism carried into...
As a matter of fact, I always come and I've been a worldly wise man for many years.
Mm-hmm.
I always called it amazing how those men of the International Brigade and what they had to put up with and how they fought. So it was an amazing spectacle. I don't know how they did it, including myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit was amazing.
Yeah.
And no one who came back was ever the same.
Pardon?
No one who came back from Spain was ever the same again, you know. It transformed people, didn't it?
The American one way or the other, but it's in the main. They all remain faithful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Since I came back, nobody's ever heard me grumble.
Yeah.
And never will.
Yeah.
And it's a suspense. And knowing it for what it is now, and it's going to, I wouldn't miss it for the world. I mean that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Do you think many people went to Spain who didn't realise really the significance of what they were doing? Or do you think
not many.
Most of them had
no, not many, because it was our job at home. As I say, we was looking for quality, not quantity.
Yes.
And I didn't need telling that myself, I already knew it.
Mm.
So when anybody come questioning me, I'm questioning him and I'd weigh him up.
Yeah.
And I think that I can always say that any lad who went to Spain through me,
it
was quality.
Yeah.
He had quality.
Yeah.
He meant it. He knew what it was for.
Yeah.
He knew what it was for. It could have been an odd one or two. There's always the exception to the rule, but I never met one.
Yeah. But you see, too, that Spain did something for the British Labour Movement, and the IB did something for the British Labour Movement. I think, as far as my lifetime is concerned, the period of Spain was the finest hour I've known in the British Labour Movement, when no bans or prescription should stand up, in spite of the bureaucracy.
Mm.
Labour Party people, communists, all sorts of people, liberal elements, all worked together, and the bands remained paper. Tigers.
There's one story I should have told you,
and
it's important. It concerns Alec Armstrong. When we left the hill, there was the six of us, and we were carrying a young white Sierra in a blanket. And for some reason or other, two of them went off through the olive grove, and that left four of us. I think it was four or five anyway. And we got onto the sunken road. See? And they started firing, a possum horse came down the hill, started firing at us. Well, one took himself off altogether. Two of them stayed there, looking out through the trees, you know, of the sunken road. I'm lying on the floor with a this blow. Those two got hit. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what happened to them after. They won't march up anyway. They got hit. That left me there lying with him alone. Alec Armstrong came along through the olive grove. Say, hey, Alec, give us a lift with this fellow, will you? See? Because it's a heavyweight, a fellow in a blanket. Give us a lift. He said, no, he said, I've been instructed to go and take a boat out of the machine gun. I said, you've no chance there, Alec. Look, there's a bloody possum horse over there. He said, I've got to do it, Tommy. He went. Love him, heard us. And I had to leave the kid.
Yeah.
I had to leave him. Because these were coming over.
Yeah.
Well, rightly or wrongly, and I think it was right, and he got shot with a stop there.
Yeah.
Up the moors.
Wouldn't have done anybody any good.
So, I'll tell you this, when I got this,
yeah.
And I realised I was lying there on my own, I did a bit of squealing.
Yeah.
That's all I was fighting, but I did a bit of squealing, expecting the moors to come up, you know, and scream for my mother. But this German came along and pulled me out.
Yeah.
But that lad, when I went through the olive grove, and there was line of Spanish battalion. I stopped with them that one night. But I met the commander on the stand, the camarada on the floor, camarada on the floor, two men, took me about half an hour to convince him and make him understand.
Mm.
So he sent two men with me. We got within a few yards of the sunken road, get down on your bellies and crawl there. Nobody about. And in the olive grove or on the road, nobody about. And no lad.
Mm-hmm.
He'd come. But the boys must have got it.
What about things like firearms, like ammunition and guns and things? I mean, how out of date were they? What sort of equipment did you have?
Well, of course, we had 1934 rifles. We sold them to Mexican, I think, they were Russian.
They were Russian, yeah. All the Mexicanos.
Anyway.
Diplomatic, yeah.
Obviously, that time, outside automatic weapons, the best rifle in the world was the Enfield.
Yeah.
Put 15 rounds in and get them up.
Yes, yeah.
But this, it's like trying to open a dusty back door, putting that them bolts on only one at a time.
Yeah.
And the first hour that I was on there, I kept firing an odd shot. Don't fire, you're giving the position away. You know what it was?
Right.
And the Lienfield was two pulls.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And I couldn't get used to it.
Yeah.
That's right,
there's
a check.
Yeah, I couldn't get used to it. I'd take a pull and it fired.
Okay.
He said, on the end, Billy, check the pole.
Yeah.
Then a second pole.
Get the second.
See?
Yeah.
But I got used to it after.
Yeah.
But again, I never used the bonding.
Yeah.
And I arrived at the battalion next day and on my way to the corral.
Yeah.
Paddy Duff was my commander, second commander.
Paddy Duff, he died too. He died in the last battle.
Eh?
Paddy Duff, he died in the last battle.
He did?
Yes.
I didn't know he got killed. I thought he came home.
Before we went into that battle, no, Paddy Duff died. We knew when we went into that last battle, we were going home if we survived that bloody day, because I was in battalion HQ when the phone rang, and it was Johnny Gates, the American commissar, on the phone. And he said, I knew that this kind of thing was happening because the flow of volunteers had finished, and Harry Pollock, the last time he'd been in Spain, he said, what do you think? I said, well, I wouldn't like to see a situation where this went on until the battalion was just a remnant.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I quite agree with you. We want to bring it home as a battalion when it comes home.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to fight for that point of view. Well, I was sitting in a position where trots had been doing mischief in opening gaps in the ranks. And so one company or another was being called upon. I'm speaking about September 1937. And one company or another was being called on to plug a gap, plug a hole here, plug a hole there. And then the phone went, and it was Johnny Gates, who was then Brigade Commissar, American. And he said, Dr. Negrin has just announced at the League of Nations the withdrawal of the International Brigades. My heart left, you know, and it was full of mixed feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, but you've got to go into the line tonight.
Mm-hmm.
He says, it's a very bad situation. It's practically liquid. The Listers are the relieving regiment, but they can't get up before it'll take them about 24 hours to get up. So you've got to go in and hold it today.
Mm.
Don't tell the lads that they're going home if they survive, but tell them that he'd heard this on the radio. He said, don't tell them they're going home, but tell them that if they do well, they'll be withdrawn for prolonged rest. But he had heard it on the radio, and the grapevine had got to work.
Uh-huh.
And all the lads knew that if they survived that next 24 hours, they would be going home. And you can imagine the feelings when you go into battle under these conditions. To add to our bad luck, owing to faulty and to some extent the cowardliness of the lad who liaisoned with us, it was broad daylight before we moved into what wasn't even a prepared position, because it had been churned up. And it was already coming daylight. And the only two planes we'd seen in many, many weeks, and good Soviet planes, came over and strafed us in mistake for the enemy, and it was a hellish day, and we lost a lot of people, including some good Irish lads, you know, that day. And that was an awful situation. You're going home, but you've got to go into the light tonight. This poem.
Excuse me a minute.
To the door, Thomas.
Actually, that's my referring to that watch on the hill above Gandesa.
Yeah.
Oh, you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Eddie Frum has it along the yellow stuff just now. It was done for a reunion of the Irish, which was held by sheer coincidence 25 years to the very night.
So it's among the marches.
Oh, good.
There's pictures inside.
Have you seen this? No, I haven't. I've heard of it.
Must have taken to my friend. In the mood. But as Gunnar Cooney, I was fighting Glasgow Central. Bob Horn, Glasgow Comrade, was in charge of propaganda and publicity. And I mentioned that some years before, I could remember reading about a publicity campaign way back in the days when it was Liberals and Tories. And that one of the posters showed a donkey saying, "I'm voting Tory, but you can see what I am, you know, a donkey." And so Bob Horn said, "Well, it's worth thinking about." And I thought he was thinking of organising some posters. But a day or two later, by the way, Churchill was due to visit Glasgow that weekend. He went in a circus round the country during this election. And he was to drive through Glasgow in an open carriage and finish up addressing the Surrey drunks from the balcony of the Royal Automobile Club at Beresford Square. And Bob Horn came to me a day too late. He says, "I fixed him up. We'll be here on Saturday." He says, "What?" He says, "The donkeys." I said, "What you don't know?" Instead of getting posters about donkeys,
he got real.
He actually hired four donkeys. Interesting. Before we were ready to go for them, they had to be decorated, and he took them into the party rooms, and they were left there to wait. And there were sort of posts in the centre of the shop. And he tied them, and I tell you, our poor women comrades had to move a mountain of shit. They were finally, but we got them all decorated up nicely, and with the leading donkey. One of them said, "What is it? The Tory working man." And another one said, "I'm voting Tory, but you can see what I am." Well, and we timed this so that we would be just ahead of Churchill's procession. And you know, the crowds were out. And incidentally, we'd had from friendly tenants streamers erected. This hellish Glasgow slum we had to pass through. The Tories owned these houses. And, you know, even the police were holding their sides and roaring and laughing at these stupid-looking animals. "I'm voting Tory, but you can see what I am." And then, at a certain stage, turned about and walked back so that we would come face to face with Churchill in his wonderful...
I was going to let in the local gang.
But I tell you what, there was an absolute mountain of shit in our shop.
On the common market. Never will so many British millions give away so much and receive so little from the few. But all the press shows, everyone, if you come on the pitch, took my picture, wrote the story, I got a good one home. Official ARP had never thought of it. I run an ARP series because besides the military experiences, I'd also read Professor Haldane's ARP, the only man to write a book on ARP pre-war in the Left Boot Club. Anyway, I wrote Spaniards Like Yourselves, Love Their Rock Gardens. With such loose material and the bombs up in 200 yards away to fly about in all directions, causing damages to life and property. Well, Frank Alone used to come and buy a paper off me. He was working as a clerk on the Misery job then. Frank Alone.
Yes.
Oh, he said, you've got a good one there, Tommy. He said, I'm going to circularise that. So the News Chronicle and the Manchester Guardian came for it. Well, and all me had all the toss of the town coming, what do you do with the rock? Anyway, it caused quite a sensation, even to the police. Superintendent Page came. And by the way, I could have helped the police to capture two Spanish spies.
Yes.
I couldn't prove it. But the police knew me habits, and I was in Mardines in Bootle Street having my breakfast. And Sergeant Cunningham's mate come and pull me out. Here, Tom. What's a phalangist? I said, it's a Spanish fascist. Well, the Franco's men.
Right.
Good. At 12:20, Superintendent Page came round. I was a favourite with the police now, because off me shouts, you know, I was showing them historical happenings that as they were occurring. Anyway, cut the story short. He came around and he said, you did us a good turn this morning, Tommy. He said, what was it all about? We said, I'd like to tell you, have it all over that chalkboard. On the retirement of 3 years ago of Sergeant Cunningham, now Superintendent Cunningham, it stated in the Manchester Evening News he captured two Spanish spies. He must contact the two.
Yeah.
I'm not claiming he did anything.
Yeah.
He knew how to come.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of course, the police knew. In fact, they were the biggest customers. The YMCA.